Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Too long, First Nations people were involved in water planning in this country, you know, and successive governments were handing out water licences to irrigators and to developers right throughout the Murray-Darling Basin. And, you know, there was a group of people in the Southern Basin who, felt that there needs to be a greater First Nations voice in water planning and water management in this country. And in 2007, they got together on the Murray River and had a meeting and worked on what we call the Echuca Declaration. And there was a lot of old people that have passed now that were instrumental in the writing of the Declaration and, really sort of getting out there and, pushing for this as well.
I think it was Will Mooney that told me, who's from Mildren, told me that Aboriginal people only own 0.1% of water through the Murray-Darling Basin, which is an indication that people haven't had access to management of water or, economic rights, cultural and economic rights to water. Mm. What will this research mean now? What's going to change?
Well, the research have three aspects to the research. One is we've got a guide for the nations. So the nations now can look at their nation and they could look at what water requirements they require for their nations and for their sites and that as well. You know, there's something like about 13,000 gigalitres of water in the system. The majority of that goes to irrigation. The majority of it goes to mainly cotton cropping and stuff like that. But this research gives us a tool now for those nations to set a structure in place to identify what their water needs are and look at real science around the water needs of their nations based on their values and their uses and objectives and outcomes as well. And it gives them and it also gives a tool to government to look at maybe changing legislation in terms of real water rights for First Nations people in this country.
And it's about spirit and spirituality for people, isn't it? Like when you talk about the hard line of economics, when we look at the history of the way the water has been commercialised, when I always ask people about cultural flow now and what their riverway or what their oceanway means to them, and it all comes down to the true spirituality and the essence of water. And now it's something that will actually be considered, in a sense, which hasn't been seen. When we look at places like Wilcannia, where areas of water have been, it's been desecrated. I mean, Fred, I think something it's good if you could explain to people is about just because there's a state line doesn't mean that's the end of the flow, is it?
No. You know, for Aboriginal people, water is water. And it's the colonisers who've placed names on that water, environmental water, irrigation water, water for domestic use, critical use water. We never had a label on the water. The water came down the system, and as an old Ngarrindjeri gentleman who's passed on now, said, our management plan of water was simply don't be greedy, take what you need and let the water flow to the nation down below you. And I think that, that management plan of the river system has gone away now, it's what we put, the value that we put on the plants and the animals and the landscape that relies on that water to flow across it to regenerate Mother Earth and to regenerate, the landscape that we live in and for us to be a part of that landscape, not separated out from the landscape like capitalism and Western democracy does. It separates you away from from your culture. It separates you away from your your spiritual connection to the land and to the waters. So, you know, for us, we're forced into a situation, I think, where we have to label the water and label it as a cultural flow. You know, and by all means, you know, for non-First Nations people, you know, the Crown under their law owns all the water and not the people. So the irrigators and the other water users only get a license off the Crown to access that water and to use that water for a purpose. For us, there was an unwritten law. There was a law, you know, that you had to let that water go down the system. So there was a watermark where, you know, you couldn't take any water if it was at that watermark. And you know, we've seen in the last couple of years people pumping water out of the rivers at what they call a low flow, and you know, virtually stealing the water. So yeah, for us, a cultural flow is more than just, you know, we have to integrate a whole heap of things into you know, modern society. And cultural flows also looks at economic development for our mob as well. So it's water, just not specifically for culture. We can buy water for an economic purpose, so that, you know, somebody or a nation can look at economic development, or we can just let it flow down the system. It's water that we legally own, and we believe that it's water, you know, that comes through our inherent rights as the First Nations and the First Peoples of this country.
NITV Radio, on radio, online and mobile.
So areas have high cultural value. I've been reading like Red Gum Forest, wetlands, billabongs, floodplains, and that's just inland. Like, we're not even talking about also areas around coastlines. So there's a high cultural value, and can you just talk a bit about why that would be? What, you know, the ancestral ties to those areas? That's where the history lies, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I can talk about one of the actual sites that was a part of the cultural flows research, and one of the trial sites, which is Gurraman Swamp, and it's on the Culgar River up in northwest New South Wales. And it's just to give somebody, you know, people that aren't aware of it, but we're actually 85 kilometres south of the biggest cotton property in Australia, Cubby Station. And the site that was selected by the research committee as the northern trial site, Gurraman Swamp, It lies just off the Culgar River, and Gurraman Swamp is special to us because of the red river gums that grow on that swamp. And for the Murawari people, the red river gum is one of our most sacred trees. It's a spiritual tree for us, because when our old people pass on and they go to the sky camp, you know, we communicate to those old people and those spirits and those ancestors in the sky camp through the leaves of the red river gum, and they answer back to us as well. Now, you know, a river red gum needs watering probably once every 3 to 5 years, and we knew that you know, a flood had to come down the river system on average 3 to 5 years. What the research had done now, just quickly, is it looked at the flow of the water down the Culgar River, and it's blown out now to probably one in every, you know, 14 to 15 years. So the development upstream has severely impacted on our value of that swamp and the river red gums that are in that swamp as well. And, you know, on average, sort of with no development, the inundation of that swamp would be 89 times, you know, out of 100 years. So for 89 years out of 100, it would be inundated. Currently, it's 29 times out of 100 years. So this is the hydrology that we looked at and the research that we looked at as a part of the cultural flows research project. And it clearly shows that development is impacting on our cultural values and our way of life as well.
Well, looks like a lot of hard work has been in there. And so I guess the work that's been done now, you've got the Federal Water Minister on side, and he has joined up to discuss, and I've also interviewed him about it as well, that they're with the latest deal regarding the environmental water, that there will be more consideration and further conversation regarding the entitlements that people have. What's the next step for you guys?
Well, I think, you know, before I move on, I'd like to acknowledge a few people, you know, that's been instrumental in this research, you know. One of them was a guy called Neil Ward, and Neil Ward works for the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, and Neil was instrumental in working through the processes and recognising that we needed science. We needed science to sit around the table as a genuine stakeholder in this water debate. And, you know, we went away and we met with Minister Wong at the time. You know, Penny Wong was the minister, and she said to us, she said to Neil, go away, find the money for this research. And we did it. So, and I think, you know, it's a accumulation of all of those things that have come together. And, you know, we welcome the minister's announcement and the minister's, you know, commitment to the cultural flows and to First Nations, you know, within the basin. And one of the commitments that came out of the deal with the Labor Party was that there'd be $1.5 million allocated to the basin for us to implement the Cultural Flows Research Project, plus two full-time positions for Inban and Mildren, so that we can talk to the nations, get out there and work through the processes of developing their water needs and also articulating, you know, what cultural flows are and you know, how we could look at achieving cultural flows in the wider community as well. And, you know, the minister has also announced a $40 million, you know, water buyback program for First Nations people in the basin as well, plus a whole heap of other, you know, requirements that of government and of the Murray-Darling Basin Authority and the CHU in terms of reporting and also in terms of, you know, employing and engaging Aboriginal businesses in any projects that are being developed within the basin.
Well, congratulations on that. It sounds like all those years of hard work have actually come to a point where Aboriginal people are going to finally have a say and be able to change the direction of water reform. So congratulations.
Thank you. You know, and I think, as you said, Dave, this has been a lot of hard work by a lot of people, and it's a start. You know, it's a start within the Murray-Darling Basin, but also this is somebody said to me the other day, this is a world first. You know, we thought it was an Australia first process around water, but they did some research and said this is a world first. You know, so we're actually moving forward within the Murray-Darling Basin. I understand that there's a mob up in the Kimberley now, in the Pilbara, with all of that development that's going on up there. There's formed an organisation that represents all of those First Nations up there as well, and are getting involved in water planning, you know, in the Kimberley. And you know, the representative that was on the National Cultural Flows Research from up that way said that they are actually, you know, looking at using you know, one of the tools that was developed within the Cultural Flows Research to look at all of their water needs up there as well, and to give them a seat at the table, because there's a lot of development that's just starting to go ahead up there, and you know, First Nations people need to be at the table with real science and a structured process of working out their water needs for their nations.
Well, Fred Hooper, thank you so much for joining NITV Radio. Congratulations.
No worries. Thank you very much. You have a lovely day.
You too. Thank you.
This was an NITV Radio podcast. For more, visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio or download the SBS Radio app.